Welcome to Conflict Managed. I'm your host, Mary Brown. Today on Conflict Managed, we welcome Dr. Richard Weisslein. Richard is challenging the status quo in leadership development practices across the law enforcement and public safety professions. His passion is to help organizations leverage and adapt evidence-based training and talent development practices to build more people-centric cultures. His work focuses on helping others understand the importance of self-awareness, emotional intelligence, and professional growth through a change in mindset. Rick is an accomplished speaker and renowned law enforcement and security trainer. He has over 3 decades of experience in the public safety sector, 20 of those working as a police officer and senior police instructor. He now helps guide the next generation of criminal justice and private industry leaders as an adjunct professor, facilitator, consultant, and coach. Rick holds a Master's of Business Administration from the University of Phoenix and a Doctorate in Public Safety from Capella University, specializing in organizational leadership. He is also an associate certified coach and certified leadership program measurement specialist obtained through the Dewar Institute for New Leaders at Rice University. Rick lives in Phoenix, Arizona with his wife, Susan, and their 2 Labrador Retrievers. Good morning, Rick, and welcome to Conflict Managed.
Good morning, Mary. Nice to be here.
And nice to have you this morning. I'm looking forward to our conversation and all of the different ways in which you have been helping organizations become stronger, and in particular, the people within those organizations. But let's start with you. Can you tell us about the first job you ever had as a young person?
Oh, boy. I worked in the deli slash grocery store in Lewisberry, Pennsylvania.
Nice.
Yeah. My mom worked there part-time. She worked at Sears and had a part-time job there. And, you know, I was a paper delivery kid before that, but I don't really think about that often. But I think my first real job was there. So, you know, making subs and bringing up the register and, you know, yeah, small town.
How long did you do that for?
I think I was there almost 2 years. And then I started working at a small grocery store, kind of like my dad worked in when he was young. He worked in a grocery store, and actually my mom worked there as a cashier after that. So I kind of followed my mom to her part-time job. So I worked there for a while, but it was nice because I, you know, knew everybody in the community. My dad was a police officer in the community. Everybody knew my mom. They both were volunteer firefighters. She was a volunteer paramedic. So, you know, everybody knew me and I knew everybody coming in there. So it was a very small town feel. And it was nice getting to see people and, you know, do that kind of work.
Yeah, it's funny. My first job as a young person, I worked at a yogurt shop and my mom was the manager, and that's how I got into that work. And so, and hearing your parents, you know, the public service industry with fire and police. And I'm not sure if you were a police officer or not, but I know that you do a lot with security. That's interesting how we are, of course, our environments influence the kinds of choices that we make.
Very true. Yes, I was a police officer for 20 years.
So you were.
I was, yeah. So I've been around. Long way from a deli making subs.
So why did you go into policing? Is that sort of the first job you had out of high school, or?
When I left high school, I went to college for a couple of years, and I actually joined the military. I was in the Air Force for a short time. I got injured during boot camp, so I didn't recycle through. I just stayed out, and I finished my degree and started looking for, you know, policing jobs. I never wanted to be a cop because my dad did it for 33 years, and he was a cop in our community. And it's like, I don't know if I want to do that. I think I want to be a firefighter. And I'm like, as I got older, I started to realize, you know, this is like embedded in my DNA. This is like something I have to do. So after I finished my degree, I just went out on my own, and I went down to Georgia, and I found a job at a small police department outside of Atlanta. And I started my career and was in it for 20 years, loved every minute of it. A lot of bumpy roads, a lot of bumpy roads. And it led me to where I am today. So I'm thankful for that opportunity. And I love the work. I love the people. I don't miss the job necessarily. I miss the people I used to work with. And now I'm in a position where I can give back to my profession, which is really that's all I care about. Giving back to the public safety profession is my life goal. It's the only reason I got my PhD. It's the only reason I got where I am today, is because of that opportunity for me to give back.
So when you talk about giving back, what are the holes that you saw in your 20-year career that you now want to be a part of filling?
That's a very complicated question, but the easy answer is poor leadership. or leadership development, not poor leadership. I shouldn't say that. That's not necessarily true. It's leadership development. In the public safety space, particularly in law enforcement, we are terrible at leadership development. We're not very good at developing managers either. We're, you know, most police departments, it's I take a test, and how good I do on the test determines that I get to be promoted. And then there's like a week of training, or some agencies do a little bit differently, but generally they're all the same. It's a, you know what, you are a good cop and you know your stuff, you're going to be a good supervisor, and that never works well.
You know, it's interesting because I, you know, talk to all different kinds of people in different kinds of professions, and it seems that's the universal story. People are promoted because they're a good engineer or they're a good professor. Doesn't mean that they are suited for, at this time, being the department head or being over a bunch of people. But I think you're absolutely right. A lot of times we deem leaders as bad leaders, and we don't think about how they got there or what kind of training they've received, what kind of continued support they're receiving, because now their primary responsibility are people issues. Right? How do I
Yes.
invest in and help the people be better than they are today? And what kind of resources do they need? And how can I help bring the best out of them? But that, if they get anything like that, like you said, it wouldn't even probably be a week focused on people management skills. And then you're done. And then you're just loosed on people, and everybody suffers.
That's true, and it's really prevalent in the middle management, and people are really starting to recognize that there was a Freakonomics episode that I'm so thankful that they put this out. It was on the failure of developing our police managers, especially the middle level. Once you get like the when you come into policing, you go to an academy. Like I did three police academies, which I still don't know how I did that. Because I had every state I moved back then, I had to do a new academy. Well, now you can lateral all over the place, which really bugs me. But I had to do three police academies, and that's a lot of training. My last one with Fairfax County Police Department, where I left, it was 6 months, and you get so much. You get the best quality training. You get out there, you have field training after that, which is another 12 weeks, and then you're put on a squad and you're kind of mentored. But that's the only real development kind of training that you. And it's mostly skill based. It's behavioral based. It's not teaching you how to be a good person or a good leader. All that stuff is skipped. And then you take a test and you get promoted after 3 or 4 years. And that's, you would think that we would do that again, but we don't. The military is really, really good at it. We just don't follow that road. We're getting better, but it's, yeah, to your point, it's not good anywhere.
So when you think about the different experiences you've had in different law enforcement, or even, with your first jobs, what strikes you as the best experience with either a manager or colleagues? And what was it that was so good about it for you?
I have two examples of that. One kind of changed my life and led me in a path, and I'll talk about that one in a second. But one of the best ones I've had, really good friend of mine, still great friends today. One of my dream jobs in the police department was being an academy instructor. I love to teach. I love to facilitate. I love to have those opportunities. And near the end of my career, my last 3 years, had the opportunity to go to the academy. I became an instructor. And one of the best bosses I ever had, my friend Mike, he was the quintessential people person. Like he knew his stuff. He's super smart, very in tuned into the way things are, but he knew how to work with people in a way that, you know, saw their humanity, which is one of the things I work with now, is focusing on, you know, he just saw me as a person and knew what challenges I had, always asking questions, you know, spending time. And, you know, he's so personable, and it just made it that much better. But you know what? If you messed up, you were held accountable. I held myself accountable to him because I trusted him. I would follow him. I would learn the, and that was probably one of the better examples I have. My second, the original one was a supervisor I had. I was going through a divorce in about 2003. Had a lot of, I got in trouble. I was very, not in the right way. I almost lost my job. I, you know, almost lost my career in policing, almost left policing, just a lot of problems, drinking, money, financial issues, all of the things that come with just not being self-aware. And I had a supervisor recognize that, hey, Rick, you've got some issues. I'm seeing some things, your pattern, and it actually took an interest in me and saw me as a person and realized that, hey, you know what? you need to get some help. And I didn't do it initially, but a little bit soon after that, I had a brush with potential suicide, and that conversation I had with him pushed me into going to therapy, eventually leading me to change my job. I was able to come out of that more self-aware, better. I mean, it's taken a long time. I'm still not, I mean, no, none of us are perfect. It's taken a long time, but that because of that, and then one of the things, I mean, there's so many pieces to it, but I started to discover I was actually a good person. I was trying to do good and be good. I was just not very good at it. I saw myself as something that I had this need to be seen as. I wanted to be a great cop. I wanted to be a great person, a great boyfriend, husband, but I was, I was doing things that tripped me up and wouldn't let me do that. And I eventually found my way, and it launched me into the place I am today. And I'm forever thankful for both of those guys in my career.
Makes a lot of sense of how people speak into our lives. And one thing I think is interesting is with the one that really changed the trajectory of your life is that your boss saw you, saw what was going on, said something to you that you initially resisted. And I think one thing that stops people from quote unquote interfering is the feeling. Like, if I say something, how is that going to impact my relationship with this other person? If I say something, maybe they won't respond in the way that is best for them. And so we shy away from those difficult conversations. And yet, from our own experience, we should know that the first time we hear something or the first time somebody points out an issue that we have, a lot of times we are going to be resistant. And yet, those seeds are planted. The fact that somebody cares enough is usually felt later, but it's not, we don't always get that positive, like, oh, thank you for seeing this in me. Thank you for investing in me. And so it takes a hardy person, a resilient person, fortitude, right? Courage. We think about courage in a variety of ways, but the fortitude to be able to speak the truth and love to somebody and be okay if they don't receive it ever. Or usually right away. So, what was your response when your boss initially said, "Hey, you've got these issues, you need help"?
I dismissive, I knew it in my heart. I felt it. I'm like, I'll get through this. It turned into blame. I was blaming others. I was blaming the department. I was blaming the citizens that complained on me. I was blaming my ex-wife. I was blaming my family. I was blaming everybody but the person who was solely responsible for that action. And it was self-focused. And being self-focused is not the way to, especially in policing. Being self-focused leads to all kinds of dangerous and ways of being that, your behaviors are just shifted in a way that you're not caring about the people that you're helping. You're not focused on listening and learning and teaching and communicating and building relationships with people. You're focused on me and what's in it for me. What am I doing? Why am I here? And that's how I saw it, because that's the, unfortunately, and that leads to, a lot of things in policing, which I'm working to try to help change, is that's the culture. That's the socialized culture you move into in almost every aspect of law enforcement. And I may have people argue with me on that, but if you really look, you start with yourself, you're going to see that you have more self-focused opportunities that you go through every single day than you do about paying attention or seeing somebody else. And once I think the low of the low, when I had that brush and I questioned my own life and what I wanted to do, and I realized, no, I want to change. I want to do better. I got into that job to help people, and I'm not helping anybody, certainly not myself. And I got to get my head right. Once I get my head right, and that's what happened. It took me a long time. It took me so long, Mary. I can't tell you. I'm still working through it. We all are. We're all a work in
Absolutely.
progress.
Absolutely. We are all a work in progress. We're all in that process of morally maturing and emotionally maturing. Just tell me a little bit more about that. Because when you go into these helping professions, like, policing is essentially a helping profession. So, what do you think it is about the structure that makes it self-focused instead of externally focused? Is it the reward system, the promotion system, Why do you think that is the case?
I think there's a lot of factors, especially after the events of 2020 and with everything with the pandemic and all the things leading up over the last several years. There's a lot of there's a lot more focus now on peer support and the trauma, everyday trauma. I think trauma has a lot to do with it. I can't tell you. I've forgotten more stuff that I saw in the job than I care to remember. And I have friends that have had traumatic incidents, but not, it's not just the traumatic incidents. And there's no outlet. There's no healthy outlet, I should say, unless you are getting therapy, unless you are really paying attention to your own well-being. It's not. Well, they're changing that in some respects. There's a lot of good peer support teams. Like my old department has one of the most fantastic peer support teams I've seen set up across the country. And I know places like Seattle and Tucson and some other great policing organizations have that for their officers. But I don't know that that goes far enough. I think that it goes back to what we talked about earlier. It's the development of people, to develop them to be resilient, to develop them to be and understand that I need to see other people. We're all human beings at the end of the day. We all live at that's our base interaction. You and I are human beings. I see you as a human being. All the behaviors that come from that stem from that, my ability to see you as a person. And we get into the job thinking that we're going to save the world and help people. Then we get disillusioned, and then we're disillusioned by the people around us who've been in the job that are just tainted by all the things that they saw. Again, trauma. I think that's a big part of it. And if we did better at developing them from the day they come into the job, through coaching, through better mentoring, you talked about evidence-based earlier. Coaching is the one evidence-based thing we don't do in law enforcement. And even at the executive level, anywhere in command, but I think particularly it'd be helpful on the first line, because you come into the job and you start becoming disillusioned very quickly, especially if you get paired up with somebody or work with a group that has that mentality. If you look at the incident in Memphis, the Scorpion unit, the folks that beat that kid to death, that there's a collective mentality there that led to that incident, but it's not just them. There's no accountability going up. All those guys got fired or are being, prosecuted, but what happens to all the leaders above them? They're not being held accountable. One of the other things in this, and I don't want to go off on a tangent in my soapbox, but I think it's important to understand is, we're so focused on holding officers accountable. We're not making them accountable people. We're not developing them to be accountable people. But more importantly is, we're not driving the accountability where it belongs, which is up here. And we're not giving development down, which is what needs to happen. Accountability up, develop people down. And that's the cycle and feedback loop that needs to happen to make those changes. And I firmly believe that. And I think that there's a lot to it there, but that's a basic summation of some of the things that I've seen.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially if you're going. I mean, this would be the case in any organization, but in particular, if you've got those organizations which you are dealing with trauma, police department, paramedics, first responders, that from day one, we need to really invest in people because the time to deal with a conflict, the time to build a healthy relationship is way before there's a problem. Right. If you want to deal with conflict, if you want to be able to have difficult conversations, you need to have what you had with those two bosses that you talked about. You need to be able to have trust. How do you develop trust? Trust is developed in the everyday, in the ordinary, in the mundane, confident conversations in the everyday so that they don't become an issue. Starts absolutely on day one, onboarding. And all the way through, onboarding in a way should this continual development and checking in and a place to be able to come with your problems and deal with your trauma. And not just because you've signed up for counseling someplace else, but, making it so easy and removing roadblocks from having and being able to deal with the difficulty. And it's organizational, it is structural. So
Absolutely.
when somebody gets in trouble, let's say for being late, and they're chronically late, and so they are chronically late, and that's an issue, but why are they chronically late? This is a very small issue. Who's not doing their job that is allowing this behavior that is now a problem? And people always get scapegoated. The embezzler Or the person who maybe is mismanaging funds, maybe not, let's not call them an embezzler, but someone who is mismanaging funds. Who's not paying attention to this? What's wrong with the systems? What needs to happen so that it's not possible? Somebody is watching, somebody's paying attention, and yet we just look at the quote unquote bad behavior. It's like the kids who are in a fight, but mama only sees the one who hit lands the last punch, and that's the person who gets in trouble. But that's certainly not the whole story.
Certainly isn't. And you're right. It's organizational everywhere. Its structure has a lot to do with it, especially in policing, paramilitary organization. And there's a lot of, in that role, you are given a lot of autonomy. You're given a lot of power. And not that it's necessarily a power trip of any kind, but I worked through enough of my started my career in 1994. So I've seen a lot of generations come through policing. And even the newer generations, and seeing them come through and watch them. And even now, when I go back and I've seen a couple of them that came to the academy when I was an instructor before I left, even they're disenfranchised with the way things are. It takes a hold of you. And again, if you don't have an outlet, and therapy's always had that bad stigma, right? And even when I coach people and cops, it's difficult to coach cops because they think that it's some kind of de there's some kind of deficiency, and that's not the case. That's what coaching is. You know that, and it's not a deficiency. I'm not coaching your fit. I'm coaching to your strengths, right? We're talking about you and developing you and helping you because you going back to what you said at the very beginning is, even giving advice, people don't listen to advice. Eventually, as you talk through things, you figure it out for yourself, and that's where the magic happens. And we don't give our cops or first responders the ability to do that in a lot of cases, and it's to their detriment.
Yeah, I love that you said that about therapy. Even today in 2024, it still has a bad name, but actually, it's quite the opposite. To say that, hey, I need help is to talk about the human condition. We all need help. And sometimes at different stages in our life, we need more or less. But in those stages of in our life when things are going pretty well, if we invest in ourselves, we do develop those capacities and we start practicing those tools for resilience so that when the neg the really hard thing comes, and it will come, that's the human condition. So we know these things are going to happen. Things are going to fall apart. If we have been preparing ourselves, then it doesn't take the sting out of the heart. The heart is hard, but we're in a better place emotionally, intellectually, and just practically, because the way you get any sort of skill is by practicing it. So do it now when you aren't having that really difficult situation so that when it does happen, you have some sort of confidence because you have already started practicing those skills in the little.
So true. And it's understanding, and that goes back to, not recognizing my own issues, right? You've got to be self-aware at some point too. And to be self-aware is not a bad thing. I mean, that's in order to be a good leader, you've got to be self-aware. You know, the one thing, like emotional intelligence, regular intelligence, IQ can't be changed. Personality generally can't be changed. The one thing we can change is emotional intelligence. And you can coach to that. You can learn to that, but you've got to be self-aware. And the more self-aware you are, which lends to the idea of emotion and understanding your own feelings and how you are in a situation or how you are in a conflict or how you are at work or at home, when you recognize those things and realize, I can't do this by myself, I need help, it's okay. It's good. And I try to preach that to people all the time. Again, preaching doesn't help anybody. It's giving advice, but eventually they come back and they're like, yeah, Rick, you were right. Yeah, I should probably have done that. That's the human condition, right?
That's right.
We all think we're right a lot of times, so we're not.
Right. Absolutely. So, could you talk about the difference between, because you talked about being self-focused versus self-aware, right? We want our leaders, all of us, to be self-aware, but not self-focused. So, how do you see those things as different?
So being self-focused means I'm focused on me, and I'm interested in my own, when I'm doing a task or I'm operating at work or I'm doing something, and I'm so focused on it, I'm not thinking about my impact on other people. I'm not thinking about my manager and the work that I'm doing and how I can help them. I need to be thinking about how I work in a way that enables others to be successful. And if I'm self-focused, I don't think that way. I think about, well, I'm getting this job done because I want this promotion, or I want to make more money, or I want to go to this other job, or me, 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 me. When we think that way, the behaviors that come with that generally are not well received, and you get seen as a problem, or you start seeing people as obstacles in your way, or vehicles to get you where you want to go, or just irrelevant. But when you think about it from a more a different mindset of seeing others and thinking about it, and then the behaviors that come along with that, you're more interested in enabling other people's successes around you. And then there's more collaboration at work, and you're not focused on what's best for me and why is nobody seeing me? It's how can I be helpful to you in doing the job that you need to do? That's the difference that I see there.
Yeah, absolutely. Self-awareness is this prize. The more we have it, right? The more the we see how, oh, I do have this need to be recognized. How can I go about filling that need in a healthy way instead of a destructive way? And it is this interesting thing that the more we serve others, the more we are served. The more we give to others, the more we get. It is just so interesting. And then when we free ourselves from having to grab, more things come to us. And that can be hard to let go, or absolutely hard to let go. And yet it just seems to be a universal maxim. It just seems to be true.
Yep. But I think a lot of it has to do with the way we're brought up. I mean, I think any of it is, a lot of the scripts that we're given as kids, or when we're going through a work environment, even like coming through a police department, you're conditioned to focus on your safety and the people around you and your brothers and sisters in blue. And it's us versus them. And that's the mentality that you're going in with, because you automatically see those people that you're responding to as obstacles, or, I just want to get out of here. Can I just, and you see them as vehicles. Will you just comply with me so I can just move on to my next thing? Versus, I want to see your hopes. I want to hear your hopes, your dreams, your challenges, or understanding people's challenges is what, once you start doing that, you can see it from a different perspective. And then the self-awareness piece is, how can I get better at doing that? How can I get better at helping you? Which again, you give, the more you give, the more you end up receiving. And you know what? Sometimes you don't, and that's okay too. You don't need to have praise. You don't need to, I love the study of philosophy, specifically Stoicism. And not because I'm a Stoic in any way. It's just, I like to live by the principles, and it's a, you control what you can control. And then your response to other people, you have the ability to control that. I can't control what Mary does. I can't control what you don't do, especially at work. So I have to consider your challenges, your needs, and try to be helpful to you in a way that I can do my work the way I need to do and get it done. But at the same time, we're working together to collaborate to meet the mission of the organization. And I think that's the critically important piece.
Yeah, well, really well said. When you were talking, I was also thinking about in policing how dangerous it is, right? You don't know this
Absolutely.
uncertainty. And de-escalation is very important in any situations you're going into, but this de-escalation starts with yourself. And people match energy. And so, insofar as you're self-aware, you can see what is triggering you, what's going on in the environment, so that you can start regulating your emotional responses, your physical responses, and therefore you're able to make better decisions. You're able to see more. Those are skills that you can learn, breathing and grounding and really thinking about being clear to actually listen and to actually see and to speak into what's going instead of responding, which also is letting go of this narrative of the other as an obstacle instead of I am here to serve. By no means can I imagine that is easy to accomplish in such difficult situations and potentially, I imagine always potentially a dangerous situation because you just don't know what you're going to get when you show up.
And that's true. That's a great point. And to dovetail off that a little bit, de-escalation has always been around. I was a use and force instructor for a long time, and I do it in both the private sector and I did it in policing. But it's part of the use of force continuum. It's you respond as necessary to respond to the threat, and you back off when you don't have that threat anymore. That's what it is. But the difference, and you just hit on it, is, and I relate this back to when I was a cop, the pre-Rick finding himself and figuring it out and going this way. I used to fight people all the time. You know what? And I didn't do it for any special purpose. I just felt that I needed to, because you resisted me, you're going down. I'm taking you down. And that was the way we did business. That's just, and you know, that's unfortunately, that was the way we carried ourselves, and that's how we responded to people. And we control, control, control. You will do what I say, you will respect my authority, you will do this, you will, but it doesn't work. And I will tell you that post-trauma Rick was, I did everything I could to avoid a fight. I would try to talk my way out of it. And some people saw that as a weakness a lot of times, but I didn't really care at the point, because you know what? First of all, I'm there to help. And if I can avoid going hands-on with somebody and hurting somebody else, hurting myself, hurting one of my teammates or another citizen around, I'm going to do what I can to resolve that. And it's, you know, you take that control piece and you step it down and you listen, teach and communicate. Sir, ma'am, I need you to step out of the car. You're under the influence, or we gotta talk about this. And if they don't listen, it's not just dragging them out of the car, breaking the window. It's teaching to communicate and then learn and listen. Okay, well, why won't you get out of the car? What's going on? And then building that relationship with people. And it can happen just like that. It doesn't need to be this long, drawn out thing that people need to think that, oh, I gotta stand here and talk to this person all day long. That's not how it's a skill, but it's in understanding ourselves, our responses, our emotions, and check ourselves. And this is why we talk about in use of force a lot of times is, hey, you know what, Mary, if I see you starting to get really tense and you're into I see you go into that control mode, I tap you out and move in. Because there's always somebody on your squad. There's always somebody that you work with that you know can handle that situation really well. Sometimes you got to know when to let them tap in and deal with the situation. And again, those are the people that are really, really good at that. And those are the people we need to pay attention to and emulate.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, back to that part that you were saying about humanity, seeing the humanity in others. And when we really see others as not cardboard cutouts or just sort of 2D to get to our next thing, right? Then curiosity is able to arise, just as you said. Instead of saying, you will comply, you will do this, asking, well, why don't you want to get out? To other persons, we'll be curious if we see them as persons. And when we are seen, a lot of time that will diffuse us, that will re, you know, oh, this is the way this is going to go, instead of so helping the other person de-escalate themselves. So yeah, I mean, you know, curiosity, whether it's just in your 9 to 5 office job, but instead of assuming we know the other person's intent and assuming that it is negative, instead of saying, well, there is a reason for their behavior, and that's one way to go. It's a good first step.
Because if we continue to get in that loop where I respond to you because I see you this way, you see me this way, I behave this way, you behave, we just continue that loop, that the collusion, so to speak. And one of us has to step out of that. Once one of us steps out of that, there is no more of that. And I see you and your needs and your challenges. Now, and I want to make one additional point about use of force. There are times when you have to use force. That's just the way it is. People don't necessarily understand that. Most people do, I think. But generally speaking, there's some times when, you know what, somebody just doesn't want to go to jail, or somebody does not want to comply, or, you know, there's situations, like you said, very dangerous situation, active shooter, whatever the case may be, you have to respond to meet that threat. But you can still do it with the understanding that, you know what, they're human beings. Whenever that threat is over, I can step back and still respond. And that's where, like, if somebody getting a shooting, you'll see a lot of times officers go up and apply tourniquets. They have to handcuff them, obviously, but you know, rendering aid and those types of things. It's remembering that, you know what, I had to do what I had to do, but I'm going to treat you as a human being just like anybody else.
When we are in a danger situation, I have never been in a situation like this, so let me just say I am speaking out of ignorance, but I think that when we stop somebody who's trying to commit violence from committing violence, that is treating them with respect, right? Because it's not good for them. It's not good for others, but it isn't good for them. And so stopping somebody who is being violent towards themselves or others is actually a mercy to them.
And that's, again, it's how you respond to that person in the way that addresses that challenge, that threat, that whatever that is. It's, as long as we understand that, you know, we're looking at this through the lens of, you know what, this person is a challenge. They have an issue. I have to deal with it. And yes, they're being violent, and I have to do my job. And you know what? Sometimes it takes lethal force to deal with that. But at the end of the day. And then it goes back to the whole, trauma and all the other things that go along with that. It's just remembering that we're all, no matter what, we're starting from that, we're all human. We all have to remember that that piece is still there. And that's such a critical component, especially when we're talking about de-escalation or even just a work nine to, like you said, 9 to 5 environment, just understanding the other people's challenges. You don't know, they may have left this morning and they found out a parent has passed away, or, like I have two labs and I, my wife and I were talking about this the other night. If I don't know what I would do if I lost one of them. I would not be in the right state to come to work. And it's that we have to remember that, well, Rick's not at work today. What's he doing? And we start asking, get pithy with our questions. And then you realize, oh gosh, lost one of his dogs. I mean, is it a big deal? No, but it is to me. And it's how I feel. So those are the kind of things that we have to juggle, especially in a work environment, because you just don't know what people are going through.
And that's such a good point. It doesn't matter if it's a big deal to me. It doesn't matter if I even understand it. If it's painful or difficult or exciting and wonderful to the other person, then I mean, how do we treat people as people? We rejoice with them and we mourn with them. And it doesn't have to be about us. It's being in a community is this endeavor of seeing and being seen. Appropriately, it works. I'm very interested in appropriate work behavior and appropriate work relationships. But, what does it mean to be a good colleague? What does it mean to be professional? And it seems to me the more that I do this work, that where breakdowns happen in work relationships is really in the small thing. And it's those small things. I mean, when someone yells at you at a meeting, I mean, that's really the exception. It's the small. It's somebody didn't recognize what I did. Somebody made a comment about me or what I looked like or what I ate or didn't eat or invited me or didn't invite me or assumed something about me. And I might think, oh, I didn't mean anything about it, but how it hit the other person, it's those little things that say, you're not trustworthy. I'm not sure about you. And then those ideas get reinforced when I don't see. When I don't see you looking at me, right? And so, the DEI, we've gone to the B now, belonging. And that's what I'm very interested in. I'm interested in belonging. What does that mean in having a healthy work culture? How do we bring that about? Because a healthy work culture is for every single person. And some of us have high risk jobs. And so what belonging looks like and the needs are going to be different than most Americans, the most people who have these low-risk jobs, and yet we are all humans when we show up to work. And so I think we have duties and responsibilities to treat each other well.
Absolutely. And belonging is such a critical component to psychological safety at work. That's what we're talking about, psychological safety. And the important piece to that is I have to remember you matter like I matter. It just because I sympathize with you or I'm seeing you and understanding your challenges doesn't mean I'm diminishing my own. Doesn't mean that I need to be above or below. It's you matter like I matter. And that, why I remember that, and don't put one above the other. We keep that level of balance, and we work together. At the end of the day, we go to work. Yes, we have to feel like we belong, but we also have to remember that we're all working together to do a mission. So when we start seeing each other, and we enable each other to be successful, and collaborate, and work together, and consider each other, and maybe that one of my dogs are sick or whatever, and you help, you not recognize that in me, and you talk to me, and you pick up something that I didn't do, and you help me. And that's collaboration at its best, because we're working together toward the mission. And it goes back to what I said earlier about stoicism. It's whether for me, it's more of a, I no longer worry about what people did or didn't do. I try to forget that stuff. It's not easy. You forget about it sometimes, but I always try to remember it's however you respond to me is I have to respond in whatever way necessary to try to mitigate that. Is I remember that I know you're not doing it on purpose. I know you're don't may not have ill will, and I just have to remember that I can only control what I can control at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I see a lot of despair with people in their work environment, especially if they've got what they consider to be a toxic work environment or just a toxic colleague. It just takes one person that you're sitting next to. And I just posted something. I do these little videos on TikToks, and usually I don't have, I mean, usually the comments are, whatever. But just yesterday I had two people say BS on what I was saying. And I was really thinking about the advice that I give. I try to, because it is advice when you're doing a 30-second TikTok, right? I know conflict
Right.
resolution has nothing to do about me. It's just about, the structure, and it's different for every person. But I completely understand why somebody would feel despair about, which is the Stoic idea that, I'm in control of my own thoughts and I can reframe what somebody else is doing and I can decide to be generous. I can decide, I should always treat someone with dignity and respect independent of their behavior. All work situations and power structures are temporary, these sorts of things. And I can just hear the despair of, yeah, but Mary, you're not sitting next to that person. You're not subject to what's going on there. And this real disempowerment that people feel about their situation and despair, like it won't get any better. There's nothing that can happen. And so while I am pretty much an existentialist, I've been moved more towards this evidence-based because I think it can show people like maybe there is hope. Maybe this could work for me. Maybe it's possible, unlikely, but possible progress could be made. And once you have progress, then the light starts to dawn. So, can you tell us a little bit about these evidence-based approaches that you have when you work with leaders and others?
There's so much to evidence-based practices, and it's a lot of the work that I do is focused on the evidence behind how to develop leaders. And one of the biggest ones, obviously, is coaching. And coaching can be applied across the board because it's really about helping people professionally and personally grow, and in giving them the tools and the ability to develop their competencies and how to manage those situations and how to mitigate those situations. And you know what? Sometimes you just can't. And like you said, it's, but something has to happen. Something has to give. And what's that something? So a lot of it comes down to what does the research say of what you can do? What interventions can you take? What steps can you take to resolve some of these things? And it's a very complex, especially those types of incidents, especially with conflict management. It's very, as you well know, I mean, that's what you do. So, as far as leadership development, there's specific ways to develop leaders, and that's in tackling those situations. Going back to what I said about emotional intelligence, you can develop emotional intelligence. Can't necessarily change personality. Sometimes it's personality is causing those issues. But here's the thing: if an organization doesn't take the steps necessary to, they have to take the steps. They have to develop, they have to work to develop you. They have to put you on an action plan or whatever. But if they do it in a way that, again, considers your humanity and understands that you're working in the best way to try to make it better, sometimes you got to let people go. Sometimes that's the best course of action. And it again, evidence-based isn't just the research, but it's organizational norms or how the organization works, whether that's right or wrong. But the people, experts in the organization, what, specific policy or something that like use of force or whatever the case may be. And those are the kind of things that need to inform those decisions and the way we develop people. Like for example, in leadership development, evidence shows that in order to develop somebody as a leader and build those competencies and the ability to do it, it's the best way to do it, what the research says, is 2 days or 3 days of intense training, going through whatever academic or something related to things they can do better to build those leader competencies. But that information needs to be reinforced over time. Monthly touch points over a period of a year or continued development. We don't do that. We go to a class for a week and check the box. Oh, I'm a leader now. I can do that cool thing, right? I know how to conflict manage because I was at conflict management school for 2 days. It doesn't work that way. Anything in development. And I think that's where we fall short is we take these classes or we go to these things, check those boxes. We can't follow through. And now I don't know what to do with you. What am I going to do? I've got this conflict. I'm not sure how to resolve it. And they don't. They skirt things around. They move people around. This happens in police departments all the time. You're not being a very good performer. You're causing issues with this in unit. You know what? I'm going to move you. Or you're a really poor leader, but you got this job because you're a really good cop or you're a really good manager, but you're not good at leading. So you know what? you're not fitting in here. I'm going to move you over here. Well, you just shuffled the problem somewhere else. At some point, you have to address the problem. And that's where I think a lot of people are afraid to deal with it because they don't know how to. They just don't.
They don't know how to, and they haven't. And so they have developed this pattern of acceptable behavior. And now it's much harder to change course than to establish patterns of acceptable practice, look at what it means to be, civil in the workplace and move forward. And intentionally, people paying attention to the culture and intentionally acting according to values and internal values, employee-centric values. What can I expect? How can I expect to be treated here? And how am I expected to treat others? But that has to intentionally be reinforced. It can't just be on the wall. And that is in the everyday. And it isn't talking about it because things change and situations change and people change. And in low stakes jobs, I liked what you said about, tapping out. But you gave that example of if your dog is sick, we can do that any place that we are, which is, stepping up or, but that's just, what do we do for a sick neighbor? Normally they cook for themselves, but today we're bringing them a casserole or that friend that needs a hug, right? That is, we have the everyday and then we help people when it's not the everyday. And then they help us. This is reciprocal altruism. We're in this together. And it's easy to talk about and it's hard to do because there is a lot of despair. And I think leadership, I mean, leadership development, it's in the word itself. I think everyone is a leader, in a
Absolutely.
particular way. But development, sometimes we think about people as products. We have developed them instead of, no, we're all developing habits, either for good or for ill. And that means it's continually, and we become how we act. And so we're acting every day. Are we going to say that courageous thing, or are we going to take the cowardly way out? Are we going to act justly, or are we going to act unjustly? Are we developing our, what it means to be wise and not just knowledge, but applying it? And those are everyday choices in development, but we do need help seeing that. We need encouragement. That's who we are. So why doesn't everybody have a leadership coach?
I absolutely agree with you 100%. And it's you hit two things that I thought were interesting points. And one of them is, we're social creatures, right? We, it's whether at work, and we spend, 80% of our life at work. And because I think a man in you, I don't know what you think about this, but with the pandemic, the way everything shut down, we have separated. We were away from each other for so long, and now we don't want to return to the office for whatever number of reasons, which are valid and valid. It doesn't matter. It's the preference. But at the same time, we don't have that social interaction. So we've disconnected our humanity from each other because we are now, I hate to say it, but we've become more self-focused and not self-aware. And then we forget what it's like to work with somebody else side by side. And then when we are forced into that position, it's where that despair starts. Well, I don't know how to deal with this because I haven't had to deal with it in a year now. All of a sudden, I got to deal with it, and then that leads to the management team not remembering or not dealing with it or not focusing on it, and then it comes down to organizational culture. Because this other thing is organizational culture can't change overnight. There's, you have developmental, you have transitional, and you have transformational. It is not easy to transform an organizational culture. And I, coming from the police department, one of my missions in life is to do that across the board. It's not going to be easy ever. And there's probably be somebody working on this long when I'm gone, but it's a mission that needs to happen. And I think in organizations need to happen. But the biggest part about it comes at execution. And to other things you mentioned is if you don't have people at the top walking the walk, talking the talk, as a leader should. Leadership's not a position, it's an action. So if you're up there and if you're not showing people that you can trust them, that the behaviors they have aren't matching what you expect from them, what do you think they're gonna follow along just blindly? They're especially these generations coming through workplace now, they aren't gonna take it, they're gonna leave. That's the problem we're having in recruitment and retention, not just in policing, but across the board. I see that in other clients that we have and clients that I work with is you know what? I'm not gonna stay here. I can go over here and, make more money and people will actually, I can do what I want. That's what we're up against.
Absolutely. Doing hard things and We will not do them unless we are shown that that is the culture, that's what's expected, and there is support to do it. And so many middle managers, through a lot, largely no fault of their own, maybe a little fault, but not completely, don't know how to deal with the difficult things when it comes to the human issues. And if we don't see it from the top, nobody is going to do it. It doesn't matter how many memos or, rallies that are had at work. This is what we're going to do. Well, are you doing it? Are you really doing that hard thing? And that's how we develop trust and how we really see what's expected of us. But the wonderful thing is that when we transform, and you're absolutely right, it is a long process. I tell people, it's a good 3-year process to kind of get to where it is that you want to be. And even then, it's through intentional, sustained focus. But once you get there, the kinds of problems you're dealing with are the ones that just happened. Right? Not the ones that happened 3 years ago or 6 months ago or 10 years ago, because you have changed course, and dealing with conflict early, often, swiftly, justly makes it so much more manageable. And we also are out of the business of changing personalities. We're talking about behaviors. And once we are all clear about what are acceptable and unacceptable behaviors, and that is modeled and reinforced. And when somebody does have a gap in their behavior performance, they're talked to like an adult and rationally, instead of put on a pip right away and us versus them. So there is all of this hope out there that it's possible, right? It is possible. But I know, and I'm sure you know too, how difficult it still is. It is still difficult, but there is another way that you can do something different. We can always do something different because we are the person that makes up the story in our mind. And even if you're working next to an actual narcissist or something, you still can control yourself and decide what to do. And it might be leaving, it might be talking to somebody else about what your boundaries are and what's unacceptable behavior. And so having a coach, having mentors, having resources to really help us individually figure out what kind of life we want to live, and then making that happen at work. It's no one's there, no one's coming to save you. That is the hard truth, and that's the freeing truth. It's you. That's wonderful news. You get to do it, but also you have to do it, and that's hard.
Yep, we are 100% control of our own destiny. And you know what? If you are, I agree 100%. And I stayed in policing because I believed in it. I loved it. I felt like I belonged there. And I had to make the changes in me and build my own resiliency, which was still taking time and understanding that. And it's not easy. It took me years, and I still haven't gotten it right. I still make mistakes. We all do. But eventually I got to a point in my career where I'm like, you know what? There were issues and things going on. I just, you know what? I'm going to move on because I can't, because I know that living the life I want to live means doing this. And I saw a better direction, and we all can do that. We have choice. Life is short. We could be gone tomorrow. And you know what? When we're gone, it's not going to matter anymore. So we got to take action now. If we want to live that life we want to live, and it comes back to stoicism, right? It's that, you know, you momentum mori, it you in momentum vivere, you only live once, right? And you have to make the most of your life, and we're all going to be gone. That's death and taxes, right? That's it. You
That's
know
right.
what? We're going to have to deal with it. And it's you can't focus. If you're focusing so much on the present and so much on the dread and the misery, and I can't do anything, I can't. It's sometimes, A, you got to take a look at yourself. And again, development coaching will allow you to do that. It's okay to leave. It's okay to do something different. We all have gifts. We all have talents. We all have things. We have to find those things. And it took me years to figure out what I wanted to do when I grew up. Sometimes I still question what I want to do when I grow up. And it's okay.
Yeah. I agree so much. And I think about, the things that get us hooked, or they're really distractions. Those, little indignities that we do suffer, they are distractions because they get us ruminating about the past instead of, or maybe even fantasizing about the future. But the only thing we have available to us is the present. And so living in the present is the only thing that we have. So, but we get distracted in either place. And so taking hold of your own self and your emotional responses and de-escalating yourself from these other places that don't exist, the past or the future, but trying to see, what do I want now? Who am I going to be now? What am I going to do independent of what anybody else is doing? And yeah, and I do think thinking about death in a healthy way actually helps us to live our life, because then it puts it in perspective. You didn't get that email. Yeah, that sucked. But guess what? You know, what are you going to do now? You can address how you feel, but then we don't need to, you know, really kind of think about proportionality of the things that are happening or how important something is. It's, you know, got to think about, well, where are you working? Are you a police officer? Are you in the ER? You know,
right.
How pressing is that? Rick, gosh, I'm looking at the time and I've got more questions for you, but I do want to end with this one. When you think about the future of work, what do you think needs to happen so that everyone is treated with dignity and respect, but more than that, they are encouraged to thrive and flourish?
I believe in the fact that it comes down to our mindset. It comes down to our ability to see other people, adjust our efforts accordingly, and based on, you know, what we're seeing at the human level, and then measuring our impact on that. And, you know, it's because at the end of the day, that's what really comes down to. And it, especially in work environment, and we're really socially connected, but we're disconnected. Socially connected through social media, which isn't healthy, but in some respects it is, because you get to keep up with people, and, you know, Facebook's been around for a long time. I don't even on Facebook anymore. But if you think about it from that human one-on-one interaction, getting to talk to you has been fantastic. I love having conversations about this stuff, and I have a bunch of colleagues I have these conversations with all the time. It drives me. And we see each other, and we, you know, it's not that I'm right or you're right. We don't see it that way. It's, I see you, and then I realize that maybe I need to adjust my efforts because I'm not helping you or not being helpful in the right way. And then, hey, was that what I did there helpful to you? It goes back to the dog's sick dog example. I see you, I see humanity. I adjust my efforts to pick you up where you need help. And hey, by the way, Mary, was that helpful? Can I do something else for you? And that's what it comes down to. That mindset drives behavior, drives results. And I think the future of work, that's where we really need to look. And second, it's, we just have to understand that we are in control of ourselves, and we may not get the development we need from our, and this goes to my experience. We don't get the development oftentimes we need from our employer. It's just budget. They just don't see it. The culture isn't the same. We have to make decisions based on that information, but, you know, we can develop ourselves. We can take the time to get our own coach. I have people that reach out to me on the side, and we have the ability to do other things to develop ourselves and to try to be better people and to try to be better at what we do and what we bring to the world. And it's about our impact on those around us and the people that we're trying to serve. And if we focus on that and we stay mindful of those things, the behaviors will come along and the results will come along. And again, like you said earlier, we give, we'll get back. It may not see it immediately, but you will see it. And it's just a matter of, are you looking for it? And then remembering that, you know what, we may be gone tomorrow. Do your best and don't worry about the past or the future. Keep pushing on. I mean, we all have experiences. We have to remember the experiences we have got us to where we are, but at the same time, we have to live for the present. And I think that's important.
Absolutely. Well, Rick, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed getting to know you and having this fun conversation. I too love having conversations about this stuff.
I could nerd out all day long with this.
Me too. So I looked at the time. I'm like, wow, I haven't even gotten to the other things I want to ask you. So, well, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mary.
Rick, thank you so much for being on Conflict Managed. I really enjoyed our conversation. I love what you're doing for leaders and leadership development, and specifically in the public safety sector. Conflict Managed is produced by third-party workplace conflict restoration services and hosted by me, Mary Brown. You can find us online at 3pconflictrestoration.com. Come back. We have new episodes every Tuesday. If there's someone you would like to see interviewed on Conflict Managed, let me know. Email me at 3pconflictrestoration@gmail.com. If you haven't had a chance to check out my new book, How to Be Unprofessional at Work, Tips to Ensure Failure, check it out on Amazon. It's 80 tips of what not to do and looks at how to have a healthy work environment. Our music is courtesy of Dove Pilot. And remember, conflict is normal and to be expected. Let's deal with it. Until next time, take care.